After the UK vote, Britain's Prime Minister won't quit, but her negotiations to pull out of Europe just got a lot stickier. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The UK election is over, results are in, and it's a stunning setback for the ruling Conservative Party there. It's lost its overall majority in Parliament. Marketplace's European correspondent Stephen Beer joins us now from London. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning, David.
Conservative leader Theresa May, the Prime Minister, this is not an outcome she would have preferred.
No, indeed. I mean, she said, vote for me and I'll be a strong and stable leader in the Brexit negotiations. But she's been humiliated and massively weakened. She could only realistically govern now with the support of a party from Northern Ireland, which has a rather different approach to Brexit than her. And the Brexit talks are due to start in 10 days' time. It's a mess. It's a pig's breakfast.
All right, but help us get a better sense of how these thorny negotiations of extricating Britain from the European Union are now going to proceed.
Theresa May wanted to drive a hard bargain with the UK's European partners. She wanted, for example, an end to the automatic right of EU nationals to settle in the UK. She wanted total control over UK trade while maintaining full access to the EU's single market and while massively reducing or even eliminating the UK's budget contribution to EU coffers. Now, the EU negotiators know she hasn't got the full backing of the British people. They're hardly going to make any major concessions, and she's going to have to go back to her parliament with her divided party and try and get some obvious compromises through.
The term of art here has been hard Brexit, a cleaner break. That's gone now, that idea, right?
Well, not entirely. I mean, this is Theresa May's difficulty, that there is this solid core of lawmakers in her party who are very much hard Brexiters, and they've been fighting this battle for many years. So it's not off the agenda as far as they're concerned, but we'll see. In this environment, it's almost impossible to forecast what's going to happen in the next half hour, let alone in the next few months.
All right. Marketplace's European correspondent Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Let me explain the markets here this morning. The British pound is down 1.4% to both the dollar and to the euro. Sterling's at $1.28. And it makes economic sense that the key stock index in London is up 0.7%, since a weaker pound has the effect of boosting the profits of international companies listed on the London Stock Exchange. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 1-2% range, with the Dow future up 33 points. Hi, David Brancaccio, stepping out of my anchorman role for a second. Marketplace is here because these days I think it's essential to have an independent source exploring how the economy really works, not just for the market participants or the financial geniuses, but for everyone. Your support keeps our kind of reporting coming, and it is especially vital now at the end of our fiscal year. If you could, visit marketplace.org/donate to contribute and to keep us on the beat. Thank you. While the subject somehow did not come up at the Comey hearings yesterday, the White House had proclaimed this week the one to talk about the $1 trillion in new infrastructure for America. The administration envisions some of that trillion will come from what are called public-private partnerships. Now, I feel no shame in admitting that I don't fully understand these, so I want to consult Robert Puentes, president and CEO of the Eno Center for Transportation, a nonpartisan policy think tank. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
What is a P to the third power, a P3, a public-private partnership? Let me understand this better.
These public-private partnerships for infrastructure are alternatively framed as either a panacea to all of America's infrastructure challenges, or else it's a corporate takeover of critical public assets. The reality is that they're neither one of these things. This is a new tool that's being used increasingly in the U.S. for procuring or managing infrastructure. Because of the ability for states and localities to borrow at very, very low rates, it's almost always going to be cheaper for them to do things in a traditional way, for them to borrow money or them to raise taxes or other kind of fees and do the projects themselves. With a private partner, you engage in these projects not to save money, but to do them in a better way, to get more value for money in those cases where that opportunity exists.
So how do you incentivize this so that investors get interested? I suppose if you placed a toll on a new bridge, you could share some of the toll money with the investor.
There would have to be some kind of way to pay the private sector firms here. They're not going to do it for any kind of altruistic reason or for any kind of public policy goal. They need to be paid somehow. They're not going to be interested in doing things like fixing the challenges with Washington subway system or with Amtrak or with the Flint water crisis. I mean, some of these things are really being designed because they are public policy goals and things that we need to do from a government standpoint. But there's other things like the toll bridge you mentioned where there actually might be private sector interest.
You mentioned the type of project that might not be suitable for a public-private partnership. A new water system for a city that's suffering through problems with lead in the old pipes, that wouldn't stand first in line for a public-private partnership. Why not?
I think water projects certainly could make themselves attractive to private firms. We actually saw this in New Jersey, Hoboken, Rialto, California has also done that. The challenge in a place like Flint is that it's tied up in a lot of politics. It's tied up in a lot of uncertainty. And the one thing that the private partners don't want is uncertainty that they can't control because they can't guarantee a positive return.
Robert Puentes is president and CEO of the Eno Center for Transportation, which is a nonpartisan think tank. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
And you got to love the British political system where especially goofy candidates get on the ballot for elections like this one. Do yourself a favor and check out a picture of the person who ran against Prime Minister Theresa May in her constituency, Maidenhead. His name is Lord Buckethead. Photos at marketplace.org. Mentioned on air tab will get you there. Remember Monty Python Holy Grail? The character, it's only a flesh wound. Lord Buckethead looks like that guy. Our senior producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Stephanie Hughes produces Marketplace Tech. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.